Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're very pleased that you've joined us for this, our second Irish UK webinar. Our presenters this afternoon will be Val Vianote from JISC, Ross McIntyre from Mimas at the University of Manchester, Angela Conyers from Evidence Base at Birmingham City University, and Paul Needham from Cranfield University. After the presentation, we'll be having a question and answer session. Please type your questions in the chat box as we go along and precede them with the letter Q. The webinar is being recorded and will be made available afterwards on the Irish UK website. Our first speaker today is Val Vier, who is the JISC Programme Manager for Irish UK, and she will set the project in context. So, Val Vier, could I ask you to turn your microphone on, please, and speak when you're ready? Thank you.
Hi, this is Val Vier. I hope people can hear me. So I'm not going to talk for very long. I don't have a presentation, as Angela said, so I'm merely going to be setting the context for IRIS and where we've come from. And obviously the project will give you, you'll get the detail within the project. So we began work in the repository user statistics space in about 2009 with requirements gathering and feasibility testing. And now we are at a stage where we are building and delivering a national shared service. And we recognized that there was a growing need to measure usage statistics as the repository infrastructure grew. So we've got now about 200 repositories in the UK. And in terms of financial constraints, we really need to prove the value of this repository infrastructure to the sector and to our funders as well. And so we needed a mechanism to start to measure that. And later on, you'll see some figures, some quite impressive figures, about the kind of usage that is currently happening on the very few repositories that are within IRIS already. So there was also parallel work with the Open Air project in Europe, and they are aggregating these statistics for FP7 funded research, and I'm also being told it's more than FP7 funded research as well. And also in terms of parallel work, we've been doing library user statistics work under the JISC Activity Data Program. So there's been a whole air of activity around user statistics. And as you probably know, usage is seen as an important factor in capturing impact. And I mentioned, you know, how do we prove value and the worth of this repository infrastructure. And this is one way of really saying, well, actually look at the usage. And as you all know, that usage is part of a growing metrics infrastructure, includes citation and altmetrics. So this, you know, we're going to start to see the bigger picture around usage with all these other types of metrics. So, and in terms of use statistics, and again, I'm talking about the obvious. It supports managing reporting and wider business intelligence gathering, as I mentioned earlier. So, and also I mentioned earlier about the repository shared service, IRIS being part of kind of repository shared services. And we're looking at IRIS in the context of a number of coordinated repository shared services. And the initiative at the moment is called RepNet, but it may change its initiative name. And this is to provide benefits to the community of working at a network level. And again, IRIS will cover the benefits of IRIS and why this working at the network level there are advantages to doing this. So as I said, the shared service level, it offers opportunities for benchmarking, which is currently available to repositories. And again, IRIS team will say more about those benefits. So in terms of JISC, as I mentioned earlier, IRIS gives JISC and other infrastructure providers a nationwide picture of the overall use of repositories to demonstrate their value and their impact. And IRIS could also potentially act as an intermediary between the UK between UK repositories and other agencies, for example, as I mentioned, the Open Air project. Open Air are interested in an API to the IRIS service to monitor the usage of UK FP7 funded research. And we'll be looking at this at a later stage as part of that repository infrastructure and how that gets provided. So that's all I've got to say for now, and I hope that gives you a very brief context of where we are with IRIS and the kind of repository shared services. So thank you.
Thanks, Valvia. We're going to hand over to Ross now, so if you could turn your microphone on.
As Valvia said, the project is funded by JISC as part of that UK repository net, which is that infrastructure support for UK repositories, and it is that supporting that community that gave us our aim for this particular initiative. It's led by MIMAS, but it's very much a collaborative development, so it's both for and of the IR community. The project team members are listed there, so MIMAS, who is essentially the safe pair of hands where we host the production service, Cranfield University, who've been responsible for the innovative development, and you'll hear from Paul, who's the developer there. An evidence base from Birmingham City University, who are experts in evaluation activity, so they came in to bolster that, and community engagement, that kind of thing. So IRIS UK stands for Institutional Repository Usage Statistics UK, and does what it says on the tin. That's all it's for at the moment. A bit was mentioned about its pedigree. It emerged from a project called Pyrus 2, which I won't go into, but I thought would provide the link there. And that had a wider scope in that it included article level statistics from publishers. We did take it forward, focusing on articles hosted by institutional repositories and publishers, and proved it was technically feasible. However, in the publisher area, there can be business drivers which impede progress. So we'd established that it was technically possible, and so we looked to the institutional repository as an initial environment in which it was realistic to set something up and of benefit. So what we wanted to do was just to enable UK institutional repositories to share and expose usage statistics, but based on a global standard, i.e. counter, which is what it's designed for. And that, if you think about it, is being characterized by being produced on the same basis as publishers, so they're comparable. It takes some action over robots, double clicks, that kind of thing, that amplify usage, so they should be reliable, trustworthy, authoritative, or at least more than otherwise. So the objectives of the project and the service were to collect raw usage data from UK institutional repositories, but for all item types. So this isn't just articles, as you'll see in the demonstration. And it's about downloads, not record views. We do, as I say, process the raw data to be counter compliant and return them back to the originating repositories. And we have found that the repositories themselves value that. It also gives JISC and others a nationwide aggregate picture of the overall use of repositories, which can be valuable. That could be on the basis of a consortia, for example, not necessarily a national organisation such as JISC. And that kind of combination, the aggregation, offers all kinds of opportunities for benchmarking, profiling, reporting, etc. And Valvia mentioned about it also potentially saves time in that we can act as an intermediary on behalf of UK repositories, so take action and conform to various standards in one place, as opposed to every single UK IR having to conform to whatever guidelines might be appropriate. So it's all about saving institutions time. Okay, I'll hand over back now, and you'll hear the meat of the sandwich, which is all about the technical aspects.
Thanks, Ross. We'll hand over to Paul now. So can you switch your microphone on?
Right. Hi, everyone. We're now going to move on to the technical aspects. I'm not sure that I'll delve as deep as some of you would like, but hopefully deep enough for most of you. When I came to start to put these slides together, I realised I could probably talk quite happily for an hour and a half, without any wrap around the presentation. So I go a certain way down, but not too far. Putting my technical hat on, I start from very, very simple sort of concepts. Files are being downloaded from repositories. Fine. So as a service, how can we get information about those downloads? I get the usage data from repositories to Iris UK. And then having got some usage data, what do we do with it? How do we process the raw data? How do we turn it into counter-compliant stats? And how do we display, share, and re-expose those statistics? Really, when you think about it, there are only two top-level options. Either the usage data has to be pushed from repositories to Iris UK, think Google Analytics, but not necessarily client-side code, preferably server-side code. Or we could try pulling the usage data from repositories where you'd be thinking OAI PMH, very familiar in our repository world. Either way is technically feasible, so which way do we go and why? I won't keep you waiting. We've gone for the push mechanism where we receive notification of download events as and when they occur. It just makes life simple. A file gets downloaded from a repository, ping, the repository server sends us a message. In fact, it says OpenURL key value pairs, and I'll come back to that in a while. Once we've got notification of usage, we handle all the processing from there, and we hold ourselves entirely responsible for producing the counter-compliant stats. It scales well. As we add more repositories, yes, we receive more messages, and yes, the logs get bigger, but other than that, there are no real issues. If we start to find that the server's experiencing some load issues, there are, of course, plenty of standard techie tricks to get around that. This push mechanism we call the tracker protocol. Just to briefly talk about the pull mechanism that we've not gone for. In the early days, actually, I was quite a fan of this, being familiar with OAI PMH. It is familiar to us all, and it's quite easy to repurpose it to share usage data. And this was some work that Herbert van der Zompel and Johan Bollen did some time ago. And it's been much favoured by colleagues in Europe as a mechanism. But for repositories, well, you have to take responsibility for making sure that you are storing usage events locally. You have to take care of the integrity of that data and make sure it remains available. You have to create, maintain crosswalks. And thinking in terms of counter compliance, there's more to that than just a few bits of techie processing. There's also a whole sort of political, organizational issue, financial implications. And if data was being held on the repositories, it's likely to be annual charges to audit that data to make sure that it was accurate. And for us, well, quite simply, with the push mechanism, bang, message comes in, we've got it. The other route, we have to manage the harvesting processes, full harvests initially, incremental harvests, re-harvests, and so on. And it just becomes a bit difficult to manage as the number of participating repositories grows. I'll tell you a bit about the tracker protocol. It's really very, very straightforward. There's not that much to it, which is part of the beauty of it. So When a file is downloaded from a repository that has tracker functionality, an OpenURL entry is sent to a remote server, i.e. Iris in this case, for further processing. The OpenURL is based on a subset of the NISO OpenURL 1 key value pairs. The OpenURL string must be URL encoded and the key value pairs separated with ampersand. So standard query string. This is the meat of the specification, a series of open URL keys and values. So URL ver just affirms that it is an open URL one string. URL tim gives us the date and time of the usage event. Request ID tells us the client IP. Request stat, the user agent. And these two, the IP and the user agent, are vital components for helping to screen out robots and double clicks. Other information we gather is the identifier of the item downloaded, the file type, the actual file name itself, and an identifier for the repository that has sent the message to us. This is what gets assembled into the query string transmitted as open URL. So touching on robots all the time, and we'll be coming back to those again later, there is a counter list available from the counter website. It's just a list of user agents, static list of user agents that should be excluded from counter compliance statistics. We screen, obviously, with this at our end, but for scalability, as we increase the number of repositories, we're recommending that there should be pre-screening at the repository end. Not compulsory, but it does help cut down the amount of traffic coming to us. Okay, so once we've got the necessary metadata for the open URL, it's been put together at the repository end, it just needs to be transmitted to a URL at the Iris UK server. If our server tells yours that everything's okay, you get a 200 okay back, nothing more to be done. However, if for any reason there are problems at our end, obviously we don't want to be losing notifications of usage, so part of this is to have a mechanism where it's possible to store any messages that didn't get sent successfully and to retransmit them at a later time when our service is able to accept them again. One thing to have a spec, another thing to apply it across increasingly large number of software platforms that are available. The list goes on: DSpace, ePrints, Fedora, Interlibrary, Digital Commons, Pure Portal, and so on and so on. All of these work differently, use different programming languages. That means we can't just come up with a single little bit of code and give it to repository managers and say, bang, off you go. We need something different for each platform. So as a quick win, we focused on DSpace and ePrints, which we know account for 2/3 of UK repositories. And to facilitate that, we have had produced add-ons for ePrints and patches for various versions of DSpace. Looking at DSpace, to say we have various patches for 1.8.1, 1.8.2, 3.0, 3.1, etc. Any UK repositories interested running DSpace, get in touch with us. When I can give you a lot more detailed information. But just to give you the headlines, when you have the patch, all you have to do is extract it on your repository server, switch to your DSpace source code directory, execute the patch command, then just check and adjust a few config parameters, including the URL to send the open URLs to, standard rebuild with Maven and Ant, deploy the updated code, restart Tomcat, and that is it. Generally works well, takes 10 to 20 minutes, can be problematic, of course, patching the more heavily customized a DSpace instance is already, but where there are problems on one occasion so far, we were able to and fro a bit and sort those out. ePrints, it's even easier. The latest version of the add-on is available from the URL on your screen. It works with all versions 3.2 or greater, and the installation is really breathtakingly straightforward. Extract the tile GZ to a convenient directory, copy pyrus.pl to one directory, copy pyrus.pm to another directory, just make sure the tracker location is correctly set, and that's it. It literally takes 5 to 10 minutes to install, and it tends just to work. While we have been working with zSpace and ePrints, we haven't forgotten other platforms. Back in days of the Pyrus project, we actually did have the Oxford Fedora repository participating. Problem with Fedora, of course, is it's a framework, and every instance of Fedora is a one-off. So, again, for Fedora, there is no one solution works with every Fedora repository, but we do have a set of general guidelines that appeared in Appendix O of the Pyrus 2 final report, which anyone on Fedora may find interesting. Recently, we've become aware through people getting in touch with us about participating in Iris that there are an increasing number of pure portals out there. And so we have opened discussions with Atira, and they've been very, very positive. They're talking with the Pure UK group. We hope that the tracker functionality will be added to and made available in Pure portals. We'll keep everyone posted on that. Other platforms, well, we have the specification for what needs doing, and we've got one guy in the Netherlands actually working on applying the tracker protocol to an Arno-based repository, and we'd be extremely interested in talking to any vendors and developers from any platform that are interested in this functionality. Just get in touch with us. Contact details will be at the end of the presentation. So, moving on from getting the data from repositories to Iris, once it comes into us, it gets stored in daily log files. Generally, I process a given daily log file the following day. Not always. If there's a reason not to, like a major restatement is going to be needed or something, it will halt, or if you know, during holiday periods or so on. But generally, on a daily basis, and it involves three steps. Step one works with the logs and only touches the Iris database in as much as it just queries it. It doesn't actually update it. I prefer to sort of sort out the dirty laundry and get the ingest data nice and clean before I even attempt to get it into the database. It only processes entry from recognized IRs. Just archives anything that's from an IR that we don't know, just in case we may need to go back and pick it up later. Sorts and filters the entries following the counter rules to remove robots, using that static list previously mentioned, and also removing double clicks where someone sat there and clicked the download button two or three times in rapid succession because it's slow or whatever. Additionally, we've also added some Iris UK filters because we've found that although the counter list of robots is good, the more repositories we take on board, it's not quite good enough. There is a lot of strange behaviour out there. As an example, the London School of Economics came on board in January, and I noticed that the ingest figures were rising really, really rapidly. I know LSE is a big outfit and well regarded and used around the world, but the numbers coming in were just unbelievable. So I did an analysis, and I did find further stuff that needed filtering out. So we are adding our own filters. Now, I'll come back to this and robots and unusual behavior again in a while. Once we've processed and filtered the data, we then consolidate the data for each item into daily stats and output those to an intermediate tab separated value file. Step two, processes that file, and it, there's sort of three example entries from it. First two entries are just an internal repository identifier and internal platform identifier, the OAI identifier of the item downloaded, the date of the event, and the number of downloads for that item on that day. We use the OAI identifier to see if we know about an item. Obviously, the first time an item appears in our logs, we know nothing about it except this identifier. And that's fair enough, as you'll see in a minute. If we do know about it, we've encountered it before, fantastic. We've already got an IRIS item identifier. If not, we add a stub entry to our item authority table, mint a new internal identifier, and just add the repository identifier, platform, and OAI identifier. The rest of the metadata, you know, we don't know anything about the title, the author, the item type, or anything else. We just set that to unknown, but there's enough there for us to actually finally download the statistics we've consolidated into, finally to ingest it into the daily stats table. Coming back to the known unknowns we've just added, clearly it makes sense for us to hold some metadata about items locally, the title, author, item type, etc. So what we do is trawl through the item table, picking up all the recently added unknowns, and doing a OAI get record, we find the bits of metadata that we want. One that I've not mentioned here that I should have done is we particularly look for DOIs because they have some uses we'll come to. Additionally, the number of item types as defined in source repositories amounts to thousands. Some of the softwares operate according to a predefined list of item types. Others, DSpace in particular, people set up their own item types. So we do a mapping from the many thousands to a very, very small set that's much more manageable for browsing and other purposes. Finally, having said that it's a three-step process, well, the daily ingest is, but there is a fourth step, which is at the end of each month, we consolidate the daily statistics for items into monthly statistics, which is the traditional counter granularity. But by having tables at both granularities, we can work with daily or monthly stats quite easily and efficiently. I'd like to come back to robots now. As I say, there's a lot of strange behavior out there. Our starting point was this counter robots exclusion list, and it was doing a very good job. When we had, when we put LSE into IRIS, by the 23rd of Jan, the headline download figure for all items from all repositories at that point was hitting 1.7 million. After the analysis that I did, where I identified actually about a half a dozen user agents that weren't in the counter list and a couple of IP ranges that Baidu Spider was using, but not nicely identifying itself as Baidu, it was masquerading as a desktop. So adding these filters, it took that headline figure down from 1.7 million to 1.3 million when I did the restatement. But 300,000 of those 400,000 that went were from LSE, the rest were from the other participants. So I figure until LSE joined, that the counter list had been screening out somewhere in the region 90% of robots, which wasn't bad. As I say, as we add more and more, it gets weirder and weirder. And really, this has just turned out to be the tip of an iceberg. It's really quite a dark art, identifying whether usage is by humans or machines or by just curious people doing something strange for their own purposes that we don't understand. And we do extend our filters, but at the moment it's becoming a bit time consuming and tedious, endlessly going back through stuff and having to occasionally restate stats. And it's become apparent that to go forward efficiently, we will need a much more sophisticated filtering system to eliminate, as I say, as much as possible dodgy usage. I don't think we'll ever eliminate all usage that's not quite right, but we aim to eliminate as much as possible. And the solution we're looking at is what I'm describing as an adaptive filtering system. We've commissioned a piece of work to do a real in-depth analysis of the data set of usage that we've got so far. And it's a bit early to go into detail yet, but it will be a system based on whitelists and blacklists and involving various metrics and scoring and weighting systems. the work is quite advanced. Just finding time this week, next week, to come to grips with the work that's been done, and I'll be trying it out over the next few weeks. If it's as successful in identifying unusual usage on the fly as it looks as though it may, then Counter have already expressed an interest in adopting the work that we're getting done as part of the Counter Pyrus Code of Practice for item level reporting. So it's really sort of watch this space on that, and we will, you know, keep everybody informed as and when we have more news. Enough on getting stuff in for now. I think time to move on to, we've got stuff we've put it into a database, which for those that are interested is a MySQL database. So now we need to think about getting the statistics out again. Three main sort of ways of doing this, browsing in the portal and providing various queries within the portal where you can just scout around and have a look as a human. Getting reports out back to institutions for humans to download as CSV or Excel spreadsheets, and for machines, the protocol par excellence for sharing stats is SUSHI. Anyone interested in finding out about more about that, just Google NISO SUSHI and you'll find a whole load of stuff which will bring you up to speed on that. And the other thing, of course, it'd be nice just to be able to allow repositories to directly embed stats that we produce in their own repositories. We have an initial API in place. We still have quite a bit of work there to fully determine the requirements, but it's a fairly straightforward thing to do, and it can be used for other purposes, for talking with OpenAIR, for instance, or with the ETHOS, British Library ETHOS service for theses to share stats with them. May come back to that in a future webinar when the work is more developed. What I'd like to do now is just give you a quick demo of the portal itself. Well, look, the homepage is just the headlines. We currently have 24 repositories with usage stats in IRIS. We started back in June, July last year, with just four or five repositories, and the numbers have been growing since then. We're aware of over 80,000 items that are being downloaded from those repositories, and the headline figure at the moment is 3.3 million downloads across all item types. That was 2.9 million up to the end of April and 390,000 so far this month. At the moment, the portal is still fairly high level, skeletal. There's a lot more work we can do mining further down into individual repository statistics and so on, but this just starts to show you the usage across different repositories of their items. We've got some very, very big players and some smaller ones. I wouldn't read too much value into the raw number of downloads. Usage is one thing, value of usage is another, and of course some of these institutions are large and some are small. If you look at the right hand column, the total downloads, that's the complete figure for all months that any particular repository has been in. I'd like just to go quickly into the ingest stats and show you the effect that the filtering has applied at the moment. For some repositories, they don't get hit very much by robots. Others, they do. Bournemouth, in particular, for some reason, something like 90% of its traffic is robots, and much of that is BingBot and Googlebot. Others less so. Cadair is one example of a repository that is pre-filtering robots using that counter list before transmitting to us, and hence no counter robots there. The figures on the right here are the same. The figures in the first four columns are just showing you what came in and then what's been excluded. just because we can. Perhaps one day somebody will be excited in saying, look, ePrints is doing better than GSpace or whatever. I don't think there's particularly much utility in this, but it was just a quick screen to put in. More interesting to everybody is work on the item types we've been doing. This is a list by iris item type. I actually have a little bit of work to do to properly map all of those source repository item types to the iris list of item types that Anne Reed put together for us. This was a slightly earlier iteration of it, and we will be updating to the newer set that Anne has devised for us in the next couple of weeks. Just to show you, as I scroll down, you can see items as catalogued at the source repositories. The item types just go on and on and on and on and on, hence the need to map to some more sensible item type. We're not the first to come across this issue, and we won't be the last, and we're hopeful that our work that we've done on item types will be shared with and used by other services. One of the great things we can start to do is actually to help with metadata quality and with other services. DOI is quite an important identifier in the world of journal articles. Publishers routinely apply it to articles, and many repositories also give the DOI for an article. You can see currently that we have DOIs for 43% of the article items that we're aware of. Looking at the DOIs by repository, you'll see wildly differing levels, percentages of DOIs. Again, at this stage, you shouldn't read too much into this. Bournemouth, sadly, at this moment, looks as though they don't do much in the way of cataloging DOIs. That's actually not the case. Upon investigation, it turns out that Bournemouth have been entering DOIs in a field predefined within ePrints just for this purpose. But of course, we've been getting our metadata from the OAI interface, and it turns out that that field used to store the DOIs was not being exposed in the OAI records for many of the ePrints repositories. Working with ePrints, this is now something that has been corrected and fixed. So, we're helping to improve the quality of metadata available at the source repositories. And in the next week or two, Bournemouth will see their figures rise dramatically as I re-harvest the metadata for items that we already know about. And their percentage will probably shoot up from 3% odd to 80% or so. DOI, as I've said, is absolutely key in identifying journals, and one of the things we can do is we can trawl through our items and see where we've got matching DOIs. An example here, it's a paper held both at Reading University and at Northumbria, and you can see it's the same paper, and you can see the number of downloads at Reading and the number of downloads at Northumbria. Obviously, it's only one small step to take this a bit further and start to provide consolidated figures by DOI. Something else that this turned up that we really didn't expect, and I'm sorry, Kent, to bring up one of yours as an example. Three obviously different articles, all with the same DOI. So that's a case where there's been miscataloging. And in another example, beautiful, an article that's actually in three different places. So again, we can consolidate across several repositories. One day we hope to be able to put the P back and revisit Pyrus and be able to use this facility to be able to match statistics for articles held on repositories with the statistics that publishers have for the articles hosted on their own platforms. And in the background, that's one of the things we're quietly working towards. Any decent portal, of course, has to have a search facility. It's just a full text search. It's nothing that sophisticated, but it does enable me to shamelessly promote us while we're in this webinar, and to highlight a rather wonderful little article called Irish UK, Making Scholarly Statistics Count in UK Repositories, that I co-wrote with Graham Stone at Huddersfield. And you'll see the Cranfield, I'm quite happy to say, has higher downloads than Huddersfield. And I think that's largely on the back of me keep mentioning it in Iris webinars, and then people go down and just download it from Cranfield out of curiosity. Just to take you a bit further to demonstrate that we can delve further, we start to see we fill out the metadata information a bit more, and we can provide graphs and tables of downloads and so on. Now, getting stats back to repositories, as I mentioned, ultimately we want to be able to embed using the API, but for now, what we can do is produce reports that can be exported. So again, in shameless self-publicity, if I go to Cranfield's data, we can produce what we call an IR1 report. This is very, very similar to a standard counter report. Any of you familiar with JR1 or BR1 or BR2 reports? And it just gives you downloads over any arbitrary period. It can also be exported as an Excel spreadsheet for manipulation by the local institution. Or we also provide this same report via Sushi. I won't show you that because it's just a very, 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 very long page of XML and not really that interesting to look at. I think for now that's all I want to say on the portal.
Thank you very much, Paul. We're going to hand over to Angela now. So, Angela, could you switch your microphone on, please?
Well, as Paul has demonstrated so well, we've got this growing number of repositories now sending data into Iris UK, which obviously means that we're collecting more and more data and making it much more of a service to the repository community. We've got 24 participants at present, and as Paul has explained, at this stage they are all in ePrints or DSpace. That doesn't mean that we're not talking to other people who may have different repositories. And I know among the group of you that are here listening today, we've got some repositories that are already in Iris UK and some who we're in contact with. Any of you who are in a UK repository, and surely after what you've heard, will be keen to join us. I really want to stress again how very easy the process is. You just contact the help desk, iris@mymas.ac.uk, say you're interested. We'll then ask you a few questions about your repository, the version you're running, and then we'll probably hand you over to Paul, who'll give you advice on how much work will be involved, depending on the answers you've given us. And once you've installed the plugin, installed the patch, you'll begin to see your usage data coming immediately into Iris UK, and there really is no more work involved for you after that. And some nice quotes from repositories that have joined: the setup was quick and painless, consistent collection of statistics without me having to do it. Once you have joined, the point we want to emphasize is that this is very much an Iris UK community. We want to build up the community. We want to get your feedback, your ideas about how you'd like to see Iris UK developing. So once you've been in for a couple of weeks, we'll send you out a short survey and ask for your comments, how you found it so far, what ideas you've got. And of course, at any time, you can contact us, either Paul directly or the help desk, for any other advice or help you may want. So here are the contacts that you need. If you want to participate, it's iris@mimus.ac.uk. If you have any general inquiries about UK RepNet, which Ross mentioned at the beginning, that's the email for that. Or if you just want to have a look at the website, see what it's all about, you can do so, and that's the project website. And it is Shibboleth or Athens Access, and as I think we've emphasised before, there's the benchmarking aspect, and all the data that is in there is freely available for you to look at within the Shibboleth Access. Thank you very much, and I pass you on now to Anne, I think, to take some questions from you. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you very much, Angela and all our presenters. Sorry about the echo. I'm not quite sure what happened there. As Angela said, we're now going to take a question and answer session. Feel free to type your questions into the chat box and I'll pass them to the appropriate person to answer. We start with a question from Nicola, who's asking about IRIS item types, as at the Glasgow School of Art, they have exhibition or show as an example. Will IRIS pick that up? I'll start with this and then maybe hand you over to Paul, but basically, whatever item types you've got in your repository, we will collect the data for those item types and we'll map it to a predetermined list. We were initially using the list that Paul showed you. I did a lot of work on this. We've come up with a revised and expanded list, one of which will be show or exhibition, and we're going to map to that. Paul, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, just to add that Anne and I are actually actively working on that mapping list at the moment, and as I say, we will be applying it in the next week and a half. So the answer to the question is yes.
Oh, yeah, I've just put the list of the, you know, the newer list, sort of version 2, if you like. That's what Paul will be moving to shortly, and you can see there it includes the show exhibition and a number of others that are tend to be around performance arts and that kind of thing. But, you know, this is not set in stone. It'd be nice to be able to move and get community agreement on it.
Yeah, I'd just second that comment. We can, of course, remap as required in the future, but also we can map to different item type schemas as appropriate for different services if need be. It's not just this, we can do multiple mappings if required.
Thanks everyone. We'll move on to the next question from Shah, if I pronounce your name right, who asks, can we register our test repository to test the plugin first? One for you, Paul.
Yes, the answer to that is yes. If you want to get in touch with me or get in touch with the iris@mimus.uk email, we can provide you with a test tracker URL so that you can test the plugin and get it sending messages to the test URL, and we can confirm that everything would be working using that before moving to the production URL.
Okay, then we've got a question from Alan asking who would be the best person to talk to about the ePrint DOI fix, as he thinks that the OU have the same issue.
Yeah, the best person to talk to, Alan, is Tim Brody, who's been doing some work on getting that field exposed for Bournemouth and some of the repositories that ePrint services host.
And another question from John asking, in ePrints, the OAI identifier is at the ePrint level, but the downloads are at a document or file level. And do we differentiate these stats at all?
I like that question. The answer is, as things stand, we're working on the rather simplistic level of recording statistics at the item level rather than the file level. However, the spec, the OpenURL spec, does include the file name as well. The original spec didn't, and we added that to the spec a few months ago, and we are starting to collect the individual file names. So once we have all our repositories switched over to new Apaches or add-ins, and we are collecting from all repositories the file details as well as the item details, we will be able to provide per file statistics and also then consolidate those into per item statistics. The reason for this is, you know, we kind of work in incrementally, and the one file per item assumption, although not valid across all items, does hold for the vast majority. But we are aware, you know, particularly with theses, as an example, you could have sort of a dozen chapters and half a dozen appendices, and it may be that just one of the appendices is what's getting hit all the time. It would be useful to know that. So we will be moving to the file level granularity in due course.
Thanks. And then an interesting question from Anthony, asking for thoughts on further exploiting usage data, for example, in a recommendation service. Encourage anybody to chip in who'd like to comment on that one.
Not immediately. I mean, the main thing is that we've set a very specific scope. So we want to count the things that we understand, get as many institutional repositories in the UK in as possible. Then we can look at what we could actually do with the vast amount of data that we've assembled together. Having said that, there is also a project ongoing called LAMP, L-A-M-P, which is Library Analytics and Metrics Project, and that's looking at what kind of a dashboard, let's get the buzzwords in, could be put together, drawing on various JISC funded resources for the, you know, for showing in front of library personnel or related, and one of those could indeed be recommended services. But we were probably going to be looking more towards the OpenURL resolver from Edina, because if you think about what ARIS is, would actually be able to supply to you, it would only really be able to say, you know, this is another one that's been downloaded a lot of times, that we'd have to relate it back to some property of the particular item that you were looking at in order to then establish some kind of relationship that would be the basis of the recommendation. You know, if you like this one, then you will like that, you may like the other one, and or else people in your area also liked, or people who liked this also liked. So we can go off down all kinds of avenues, but the main thing, I think, is really if we can just count the things that we understand first and then build on that. But we'll certainly make the data openly available, so there'll be an API for people to do marvellous creative things. I mean, it might be good for a hackfest, for example, that kind of thing.
Just to say, absolutely, I agree with what Ross has said. Right at the beginning of IRIS, you know, there was a lot of interest in, great, so you're going to be able to do all sorts of exciting alt metrics and all sorts of things. But we really have had to be firm about getting the basics right first. You know, the first real problem with repositories and statistics is that there has been no common standard for the production of statistics across repositories and different repository platforms. Once we've got that right, as Ross says, there are any number of exciting, sexy things we can build over it, but let's get the basics right first.
And I was just going to say, just the facility that Paul was showing you of multi-authored works appearing in different repositories, being able to gather all that information together, I think is a tremendous thing as regards researchers in an institution being able to see the total use of their work through across repositories instead of just in their home one. But that's a start, if you like, on the sort of things that RSUK could do.
Thanks, everyone. We've got a question now from Alan. We'll take this as the final question, as it's almost 3 o'clock. And he's asking, when can we expect more details of the APIs, e.g. for resurfacing stats locally on IRs? Paul, maybe?
Yeah. Hi, Alan. Actually, if you send me an email, Alan, we could start talking as soon as you like. At the moment, as I say, I've got an initial API that's really, as much as anything, being based on my own best guesses of the sort of things you might like to get out of an API. But if you're interested, particularly interested in this area, I'd love to work with you. You could have a play with the API as it stands and begin the process of informing its development.
Okay, in which case, thank you again to all our presenters. Thank you to everyone who asked questions. If you've got any questions that we haven't answered, or if you think of anything else you want to ask us, please email us at iris@minus.ac.uk. We'll get back to you shortly. The webinar has been recorded and we'll make audio and video files and the presentations available. Thank you very much for joining. After the webinar, we will be circulating a short questionnaire to all participants. We very much appreciate it if you were able to spare the time to complete it. As we've said all along, if you're not already participating in IRIS UK, we'd love you to do so. Please get in touch. And then finally, please remember to log out of the session using the exit button just above the list of names. Thank you and goodbye.